it's APPA. You love the APA. I feel like there's a three-way that could get going here.
Excuse me, Imani. This is a family program.
Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire News Group podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is living in a new house.
Woo!
Well, at least I am. It's very exciting. I'm just 30 minutes away from Jessica Mason-Piglo. I'm Rewire News Group senior editor of law and policy, Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piglo, Rewire News Group's executive editor. Rewire News Group is the one and only home for expert repro journalism that inspires you to stop and smell the flowers. It's springtime, y'all. And Boom Lawyered Podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners. So, Imani, I took a couple days off because it was my birthday, and like
Happy
that's
birthday.
Wild for me to do, but I did. And let me just say, way to go to you and Esther and the entire Rewire News Group team for holding it down. The coverage that we have had, crushing. The little package we put together on clinic harassment, the piece about how it just hits differently when you're Black, like, my goodness. It's a proud day here.
It is a proud,
proud day. I mean, we're all waiting on some, what we're assuming to be bad news, but yes. You know.
But it didn't interfere with your birthday, and it didn't interfere with my house move, so I feel like from here on out, we can't really complain.
Truly, truly.
And it didn't happen today, which is when our boss is flying in and we're all having dinner, so. I think we should,
Little tiny mercies,
exactly.
But, you know, I want to give a very special fan shout out to Liz Sepper today, because she's been a friend of the pod for a while now. She's a law professor at the University of Texas. And, you know, she actually drugged me a little bit on Twitter, Imani.
She did. She dragged you. She did.
She dragged me just a little bit.
It was a small, like, gentle white lady drag.
It was.
Like white-on-white violence.
It was.
Like minor violence.
So, first of all, big thank you to the folks at Gaslit Nation who you and I appeared on their podcast. Man, was that a wild and fun ride. If you have not had the chance to go listen to that, please do. And, you know, the Gaslit Nation folks were out there promoting all of it. And here comes Liz jumping on that. And this is what she tweeted out. So for Hegemommy's birthday, a reminder that she and Angry Black Lady are nearly, with a little asterisk, always right about abortion and the courts, with another little asterisk. And then she goes on, nearly brought to you by Jess's wildly hilarious prediction that Chief Justice Roberts will step down if he doesn't get his way in Dobbs. Liz, I stand by this.
If you'd end up being correct, that would be hilarious. That would be absolutely hilarious. But I do want to say a special thanks to Andrea Chalupa and Sarah Kendzior. 100%. You know, we recorded that podcast with them in December. So it was basically right after oral arguments.
Whoa.
And so it was fun for me to go back and listen to what I was saying 4 months ago, because I was saying smart things.
You were.
And now I think I'm just tired.
No,
just
you're still saying smart things.
Just waiting for the anvil to drop on my head. And I don't know. We're going to be okay somehow.
We are going to be okay. And you know what else is wild?
What?
We're
what
just like a couple episodes away from 1 million downloads of Boom Lawyered.
1 million downloads for our little podcast that could.
The little podcast that could.
I love it. That's so fantastic. And thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to everyone who became a law nerd with us, who started out as a law nerd and just kept it going, just keeping that nerdery going. We really appreciate you and we love all
the nerdery is so good. And because of that, this, you know, 1 million downloads mark, which is just like, I mean, truly, my mind is blown. Imani and I are cooking up something special. So stay tuned on the Twitter feed at Rewire News Group for that, folks. That is going to be good.
It's going to be good. You know what's not going to be good?
Oh, what?
This post-Roe world that we're inching inexorably closer to.
Yeah.
As days go by, minute by minute,
like
second
sand
by
through
second.
The hourglass.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our abortion lives. You know, Jess and I have been warning you about the post-World War Roe. That was real weird. That came out super strange. The post-Roe world, we've been talking about it basically since the beginning of time, right?
I mean, functionally, we're that old?
I mean, we're that old. And right now, lawmakers and advocates, reproductive justice mm-hmm. and rights, lawmakers and advocates alike, are trying to figure out what their next steps should be. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but I know what lawmakers' next step should be if Ooh. Those lawmakers live in abortion-friendly states.
Ooh, I love this. What's that?
They should emulate Connecticut.
What? Connecticut?
Connecticut. Yeah, you've heard of Connecticut. The little tiny state up in the northeast there. It's got a little school called Yale. Yale's in Connecticut. But Connecticut, a lot of insurance companies in Connecticut.
I was going to say, I know Connecticut from my insurance day.
Yeah, a lot of insurance companies in Connecticut. But also, a lot of bad bitches in Connecticut.
Apparently.
Right? Like, Matt Blumenthal, his name is Matthew Blumenthal. He introduced this bill, and then it passed both chambers of the Connecticut legislature over the weekend. And it's badass. It's amazing. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the way that Connecticut is sticking its neck out to protect abortion providers and other people in the abortion access pipeline that are being targeted by bounty hunter laws like SB 8 in Texas.
Oh, this is sexy. I love it.
So,
yes.
We know the post-Roe world is going to be freaking chaos, right?
Chaos!
It's going to be chaos. And so we need to talk about what it is that Democratic lawmakers in abortion-friendly states can do to protect abortion providers and to protect aiders and abettors, right? These aiders and abettors of abortion from being sued for performing legal abortions or facilitating legal mm-hmm. abortions in their own state of residence to people fleeing abortion-hostile states for care, right? So I'm talking about... There's an abortion provider in Connecticut who has written a medication abortion prescription for someone outside of Connecticut, say someone in Alabama, for example. Let's say actually, we're not going to use Alabama. We're going to use Missouri.
Okay.
Because Missouri is a state that we've had a bone to pick with for how many years? How many open letters have I written?
I was just going
to
say, you've got like 24, 28 Honestly. Open letters to Missouri working now.
And Missouri has been, you know, gangbusters going mm-hmm. after abortion providers. So let's say there's an abortion provider in Connecticut who wants to provide an abortion to someone who's in Missouri. Can Missouri reach into Connecticut and sue or charge or say that the person in Connecticut is liable for this abortion, even though they're in a state in which abortion is legal? One of the biggest myths about the post-Roe world is that once abortion is criminalized, everything's going to be easy peasy, right?
Right.
It's going to be super easy. The abortion question's just going to get thrown back to the states, and then states can figure out what they want to do.
Yeah.
And that seems right. That sounds right, right? To a person who's not a law nerd, to a person who is not a boom lawyer enthusiast, uh-huh. that sounds right if you're only focused on due process, right? And whether sure. or not states can sort of circumscribe the boundaries of due process that its citizens are entitled to. But I have a question.
Uh-oh.
What about states that are trying to restrict their own residents' ability to get abortion care in other states, right? By criminalizing non-residents who help residents get abortion care. That Missouri, what if Missouri wants to attack Connecticut abortion providers? What then, Jess? What then, I ask you?
I mean, okay, first of all, rude to give me a stomach ache on my first day back after a couple days off.
And the scallop situation. I apologize. Reader, let me explain the scallop situation. I took this lovely woman and her husband out. Actually, a lot of you did. Twitter
yeah,
did.
Thank you, Twitter.
I put out the Twitter collection plane. Y'all chipped in and we took Jess out for oysters for her birthday. And we found out that Jess is allergic to shellfish now.
Aging.
It was a sad day.
Aging is wild.
Aging into allergies is bullshit, but we digress.
But I need to talk about abortion and civil procedure because this is Imani's thing now, and I am getting along for the ride. So much civil procedure. I have a basic question for you.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? How? Because here's the thing, like, you're so right. This idea that, you know, we hear, oh, you know, the Dobbs decision comes down and let's assume they reverse Roe in the Dobbs decision and that kicks it back to the states. Well, in some states you can get an abortion and in other states you can't. That is the kind of logic that anti-choice propagandists like to use, because it's easy for folks who aren't in the fight day in and day out to digest it. It, like you said, it kind of makes sense. But the reality is it's nonsense, right? Nothing will be easy. It will be chaotic. And states are going to what? Rewrite the Constitution in their quest to fully eradicate legal abortion in this country? I mean, that's what it sounds like, right?
It sounds like we are entering a period that is sort of unprecedented. I mean, yes, abortion was criminalized previously, but this is a period where we are going to have a backlash to a right that existed for 50 years.
Yep.
And so what does that mean? And so this question of what states are going to criminalize abortion and then what states are going to want to keep their own residents from getting abortions anywhere,
yeah,
that's going to be the main question. That is a civil procedure clusterfuck. A civil procedure clusterfuck that I love!
This is so rude. This is so rude. You have a right to travel.
Yes.
Right? There's due process laws that exist that says, you know, functionally, you can't treat me differently if I am a resident of Missouri than if I am a resident of Illinois, for example. The hell is going on, Imani?
Well, like I said, we're entering an unprecedented time, right? If abortion is, quote unquote, murder in Missouri, mm-hmm. and it's not murder in Connecticut, arguably, if you're a quote unquote pro-lifer. I'm doing a lot of sarcastic quotes here.
You are.
But if you're an anti-choicer, it makes sense in the anti-choice mind that if you are committing murder,
yeah.
that the state that wants to prohibit murder should be able to go and grab the people who are doing the murdering, even if they're not in the state, right? Like, the problem is usually these United States have relatively uniform criminal laws, right? You can't just murder somebody in Missouri and then flee to Illinois or flee to Connecticut and not expect to get extradited, right?
Right, right. Like, the Constitution talks about that. Finally, I have an entry point. We can be done talking about civil procedure for a hot minute here.
Oh, we're not done.
Imani's absolutely right. Like, the Constitution actually addresses the idea that you can't go commit a crime in one state and then flee to another state to avoid the reach of the law. It's called the extradition clause, right? Like, it's in the Constitution. It's the do the crime, do the time clause, as Imani called it on our edit call this morning. It's pretty straightforward. It says, you know, you do something like commit a felony in the state of Connecticut and you flee to the state of Missouri, for example, the state of Connecticut has a way to bring its long arm of the law into the state of Missouri and haul you back for justice. Except we're in the upside down because abortion's not a crime. The extradition clause shouldn't apply.
Yeah, but it's going to get tricky. It's going to get really tricky, like civil procedure tricky. And David Cohen, who I would say he's a friend of the podcast,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Okay, he's a law professor at Drexel. He's got a really, really fascinating new article out with Professors Greer Donnelly and Rachel Rebouche, I hope I'm not pronouncing their name wrong, of University of Pittsburgh and Temple University, respectively. This article talks about this civil procedure morass that awaits us in a post-Roe world and really sort of drills down into the ways in which the criminal law works in states and among states is generally just sort of like, hey, we're all getting along. Someone did a crime in your state. Just bring them on over. We'll prosecute them. I mean, it's been comedy. Let's use the word comedy, not comedy, haha, comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y, right?
That's actually funny. I have a comedy, haha story from my private practice days. Well, I was working on a brief.
It.
No, seriously, I have to digress on this. I was working on some like terrible, probably an insurance brief, given what I was doing at the time. And one of the like senior partners came in and knocked on the door. You know, you had to keep your door open because if it was closed, that was like bad, right? So knock on the door to walk in and was like, hey, Jessica, you know, and I was like new at the firm, maybe like a couple months. What do you know about comedy? And I just kind of went dead in the eyes and was like, I mean, I know what I think is funny, but I think it's probably and like doing that, like, what do I say? Here's this like powerful person in the firm. And he just looked at me like I was a sweet summer babe.
Oh, you sweet summer child.
And said, no, Jessica, comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y. And he spelled it.
Oh, God.
And you're now talking to my ghost because I had died at the time. Anyway, comedy is actually a legal principle.
It is. And it refers to the ways in which courts of one state or one jurisdiction will respect the laws and the judicial rulings of other jurisdictions, right?
Yep.
If it's state, federal, international, everyone's cooperating to make sure that the people who are doing the bad things get got.
It's the get-along clause, functionally.
It's the get-along clause. And it's not really a matter of obligation. There's no rules or laws that say you have to do these things.
Yeah.
It's just deference, mutual respect. Connecticut and Missouri want to get along. They want to be able to go out to bars and have shots and, like, not have it get weird and awkward. You know what I mean? Like, let's just all get along. And there's also cooperation between state law enforcement agencies, right? Yep. Like, I'm sure you've seen these cop shows where it's like, oh, someone says, juris my diction. Someone always says, juris my diction. But the idea is that state law enforcement agencies will cooperate with one another. Sometimes they won't like it, like if the FBI has to come in and take over a local case. But generally, they all have the same goal. They want to make sure the people who are doing crimes get punished for it.
Yep.
Well, now, so David Cohen and the other two professors, Rebuchet and Donnelly, posit that the way to get at this problem would be for abortion-friendly states to stop being so nice.
Ah!
To stop going along to get along with these states that are hostile to abortion, right? So if an abortion-friendly state wants to protect their own citizens from harassment by abortion-hostile states, just make sure that the long arm of the law of that hostile state can't reach into your state and grab your residents.
There's a very appealing baseline to this, which is just like stop playing nice and abiding by norms that the opposition gave up long ago.
Yes.
So I like that. Okay. But I got to talk about the Constitution for a minute. Okay.
Okay.
And the extradition. Look, you do civil procedure. I'm doing the Constitution, Monty. Okay, this is our sparring. Article 4, Section 2 of the Constitution, that's the extradition clause. And this is what it says, right? A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice. I kind of love that, flee from justice. And be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. So what about that?
Well, you said any person charged, blah, 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 who shall flee from justice.
Uh-huh.
So the extradition clause ostensibly only covers people who flee from justice. It doesn't necessarily cover someone who is in Connecticut and wrote a prescription for medication abortion pills to someone in Missouri, for example.
Because they didn't go anywhere.
Or if someone from Missouri goes and sees an abortion provider in Illinois and Illinois passes one of these fuck you, we're protecting our residents statutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Illinois can just say, no, you're not coming here to grab our residents because our resident did nothing wrong. Abortion is legal in Illinois. And in fact, we have the statute that says we're going to protect all the providers and people in the pipeline.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm tracking with that. But there are also, I hate to do this, but there are also state laws about extradition that apply even if a person hasn't fled. So maybe we're out of the constitutional territory, but what do we do about those state laws? What then?
Well, the great thing about state laws is they can be changed depending upon who is in the legislature. And that's where I almost said Dr. Cohen. Is he a doctor? I guess he might be a
juris doctor.
He's a juris doctor. Juris Dr. Cohen. David. I'm just going to call him David. But that's where David and his co-author's solution comes in. They are proposing that states carve out exceptions for abortion providers. So sure, the extradition clause doesn't hinge necessarily on fleeing from justice as a matter of state law. And therefore, the state can just change the goddamn law.
Okay. And we know that states are kind of keen to single out abortion providers anyhow. Why not do it for the power of good for a change, right? So providers can perform abortions in their home state on out-of-state patients without getting extradited to the state where the patient came from. That is good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Sorry, I came back to
more butts.
But what about harassing providers through lawsuits, right? We've talked about that. Folks will do that in the hopes to get confidential information, maybe through the discovery process, or just grind them down in terms of cost and money. States should probably exempt abortion providers from that sort of intrusive discovery too, don't you think?
Absolutely. And Juris Dr. David. I'm going to call him that on Twitter one day. He's gonna be like, what the hell
that's
are you talking
amazing.
About?
I hope it sticks.
But, you know, David Cohen et al., their solution is to pass something called the Abortion Provider Protection Act that would include all of these sorts of exemptions, right? We know how Americans United for Life love to come up with these model bills, right? Mm-hmm. And then they just pass them around the country and state legislators just fill them in with whatever they need to be filled in with. And boom, they become law, right? Democratic states should do that. Abortion-friendly states should do that. They should literally take Connecticut's bill, cross out the word Connecticut, and write in the word California, Illinois, like whatever states that are not just abortion neutral, but abortion friendly. They need to start passing these laws. And it's a great idea and something that all these friendly states could do to reduce abortion providers' risk, to stick it to the abortion hostile states. And I feel like everybody wins. And I just have to point out again, and I know I talked about this when SB 8 passed a long time ago. What's really happening here is basically a fugitive slave clause, but for abortion providers, right? Like that's the sort of territory we're entering in where there are certain states that want to protect certain things that they love, right?
Yep.
Like back in the day, Southern states loved them some slavery. And so what they decided to do, besides have a civil war about it, they wanted to have the fugitive slave clause. So just in case any of their property escaped, they were able to go into another state and grab their property and bring their property back.
Yep.
So I'm getting big vibes about this, as if abortion providers are somehow enslaved people who are escaping the clutches of, I mean, I know a lot of times pro-lifers like to make the case that, quote, abortion is slavery, when really forcing someone to carry a pregnancy to term is more like slavery than the other thing. But that's just my own personal view on the subject. But the point is, Connecticut is doing amazing things. And let's talk about it.
I love this in part because I want to be able to shout APA instead of HIPAA for a change.
also relevant to your interests, it's APPA. You love the APA. I feel like there's a three-way that can get going here.
Excuse
you,
me, Imani. This is a family program. No, but I love this so much because it shows that Democrats aren't done fighting for abortion rights. And, you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about in this, like, time while we're waiting for the Dobbs decision and, like, what can people do? Well, lawmakers can step up and start passing laws that protect the people and providers in their states, like what Connecticut has done. And so we've been sort of, like, all over the map, but let's really drill into what this bill does, okay? HB 5414 does a couple really cool things. Like Imani said, it bars state courts in Connecticut from enforcing another state's penalties against a person who performed or aided and abetted an abortion that's legal in Connecticut. So that's directly at Texas and Oklahoma and all of these folks who are passing these laws thinking they're just going to sue every Tom, Dick, and Harry across the country who's helping perform abortions as a way to harass them. That's Connecticut lawmakers giving them the finger. And I kind of love it.
Yeah, it's the best. It also allows people sued under SB8-style bounty hunter laws, and I love this bit.
Yep.
It allows them to countersue the people who are suing them in Connecticut, right? So one of the big obnoxious things about SB8 is that it allows people to sue a Texas provider in any of the 254 counties in Texas. Texas is a big-ass state. If you get sued in Western Texas, the law says you can't even ask to change venue if you live in Eastern Texas and would prefer to be sued in Eastern Texas. So you know what? I am here for Connecticut saying, fine, you want to pull this crap in our state? Then you're going to have to come to Connecticut so these providers can sue you in our state with our state laws of civil procedure and discovery and such.
Yeah, and Connecticut's not done. It also broadly prohibits state authorities from complying with another state's request to investigate, penalize, or extradite individuals for providing or facilitating reproductive health services. I'm going to call this the not ready to make nice provision here, right?
Yes.
Like you abortion hostile states are going to do what you're going to do. You lawmakers are going to do what you're going to do. But Connecticut, we're not going to play nice. We're not doing that.
It's also kind of a middle finger to, I'm going to call them the Kim Davis types. You remember Kim Davis, the lady in Kentucky who didn't want to provide marriage certificates to same-sex couples, even though the law required her to.
Yep.
And there was a huge kerfuffle. She made a big stink about it and cried her white woman tears, and everyone got all...
That's still going, by the way. She's still crying.
So I love this because if there is a, quote, Kim Davis type in Connecticut, right?
Yes.
Someone who does not want to comply with these pro-choice, abortion-friendly laws. And they say, I'm going to take a stand. And they're going to, you know, go try and get an injunction or try to just gum up the works somehow.
Mm-hmm.
These laws say, you know what? We are taking that choice out of your hands. We're not even saying you can decide whether or not to go after this abortion provider. We're saying that you can't. We're saying that we are going to grind the wheels of justice to a halt when it comes to people out of state coming into our state and trying to yoke people up under these laws, right? So I feel like it's telling anyone who might be opposed to these sorts of laws in those states, suck it up and deal with it. You have to follow the law.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that is a suitable solution to this shitstorm of a world that we are going to enter, right? Like, this post-Roe world is going to simultaneously crush my spirit and tickle my Civ Pro bone. And that's a kind of an unfortunate place to be in. Like, hooray, that's how I am right now. I think it's important for our listeners to understand that the criminalization of abortion isn't going to be easy.
No.
And anti-choice lawmakers and advocates want to make it seem like it's just going to be easy. It's not a big deal. We're just going to throw it back to the states. There shouldn't be a federal response when it comes to abortion rights. And there absolutely should.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be. And far from an easy path, states are going to start fighting with each other about their relationship to each other. They're also going to start fighting with each other about their relationship to the federal government more so than they have been. And the fight is going to be about whether or not they have a duty to respect each other's laws when one state finds the other's laws immoral, right? Abortion-friendly states think that abortion-hostile states' laws criminalizing abortion and basically enacting a neo-fugitive slave clause, they think that's immoral.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I get it. Missouri thinks that abortion is immoral, even though it's not. It's a human right. It's a human good. It's good medicine. But that's what they think, and they're going to behave in that way. And so we're about to have a real big fight about federalism, about comedy, about civil procedure, and I am here for it. And I know you're not, but that's okay. We'll hold hands and get through it together.
No, but the thing is, you make a really... this is why when Imani and I talk about how the fight for abortion rights and access is intimately tied up for the fight for democracy, this is exactly what we're talking about. Because you cannot unravel one part of the Constitution without unraveling other parts of it as well. And so doing something like taking away a federally recognized constitutional right that has existed for, you know, pretty much 50 years, and then just saying, now states figure it out from here, will rewrite the American experience in ways we don't understand yet. And that's just the flat truth.
And there's also, I mean, not to blow more smoke up Jurist Dr. David's ass, but I do love, there's a whole section in this article, and it hasn't been published yet. I think they're waiting for Dobbs to come out so they can finally put the finishing touches on it. But there are things that Democrats at the federal level can do, right? The federal level can go Connecticut on everybody's asses and, mm-hmm. for example, open up federal abortion clinics in abortion-hostile states.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are constitutional issues, and perhaps at another episode we'll go through all of those thorny issues. Jessica's eyes just were like, do we have to? But, you know, there are going to be some really interesting fights. And if we get Democrats in power who are willing to have those fights, if Joe Biden is willing to have those fights, he could open up a freaking abortion clinic in Texas tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just federally funded, get a bunch of doctors pay. I'm sure there are tons of abortion providers who would accept a check from the federal government to go out help out pregnant people in Texas.
I'm just saying, look, we are in uncharted waters, so let's try everything. See what sticks.
Everything. Throw it all at the wall like so much spaghetti. Mm. And on that note, if you would like to talk, see, this has been a pretty happy episode. I'm kind of excited for us. Good for us. Talking about positive change. I'm doing a little shimmy. If you would like to talk to us about any positive aspects or not the worst aspects of this post-Roe world that we are entering, if you are a CivPro nerd, if you are a stick-it-to-abortion-hostile states nerd, you can talk to me on Twitter. I'm at AngryBlackLady. You can talk to Jess on Twitter. She's at Hegemommy, and she's allergic to shellfish now. It's sad. H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M. Why am I allergic to shellfish? You should follow Rewire News Group on Twitter, on Instagram. You should follow us on the web, the worldwide interweb, where we have such great content. And just stick with us. Things might not be the greatest, but we're going to get you through them. And what else are we going to do, Jess?
We're going to see you on the tubes, folks.
We'll see you on the tubes, folks.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piglow and Imani Gandhi. Mark Folletti produces the show.